Welcome to The Reading Man, a podcast devoted to books that I find the time to get around to. I'm Pete Powers, and today's subject is the latest Jeremiad from intellectual provocateur Stanley Fish, a work he has entitled Save the World on Your Own Time. The target of Fish's imperative is an academic culture gone awry and wandering in a desert of misguided good intentions. Like Jeremiah and other prophets of old, Fish sets out to call the wanderers from their wandering, to set their feet toward the home of their true academic calling. Fish's thesis is simple. Academics are good at one thing, but in the name of saving the world, we try haplessly to be good at nearly everything else. Specifically, academics are good at helping students become better thinkers. We give students access to information or to traditions of thought. We teach them methods for accessing new information for themselves. We teach them to evaluate the information and the arguments they encounter. We teach them to form clearer and more consistent arguments. We do this from the conviction that having more and better information about the world and thinking more clearly about that world will bring us one step closer to the truth. Instead of embracing this necessary calling, we have decided to be revolutionaries, or missionaries, or therapists, or activists. We have exchanged the good meat of our expertise for a mess of amateuristic porridge, albeit an amateurism that induces us to imagine we are manning the ramparts of justice. In Fish's view, colleges everywhere grandly claim that they will improve the moral or civic character of their students, or that we will serve the ends of justice, righteousness, and democracy. In fact, all we can honestly claim is that we help people become better thinkers, whatever the ends to which thinking may be put. Fish puts it this way. Teachers can, he says, by virtue of their training and expertise, present complex materials in ways that make them accessible to novices. Teachers can also put students in possession of the analytical tools employed by up-to-date researchers in the field. But teachers cannot, except for a serendipity that by definition cannot be counted on, fashion moral character or inculcate respect for others or produce citizens of a certain temper. Fish continues, they cannot do these things unless they abandon the responsibilities that belong to them by contract in order to take up responsibilities that belong properly to others. But if they do that, they will be practicing without a license, and in all likelihood doing a bad job at a job they shouldn't be doing at all. This is vintage Fish, and there's always something thrilling about the fishy tones of a fishy argument. Beyond being a reader of his books, I was a student in one of Fish's courses on the poet John Milton. There is perhaps no greater marvel than the facility and disdain with which Fish eviscerates an argument, especially one that strikes others as the plainest of common sense. There was no greater agony for a graduate student than to be so eviscerated. In the midst of argument, whether about Milton or the First Amendment, no one persuades like Fish. His elegant style belies a rapier wit that leaves an opponent's guts lying in a smoking heap. Nevertheless, if you can manage to escape the room alive, there is usually still room for argument. Fish surely has a point in this book. English departments have justified their existence of late by claiming that we will make the world a better place for the multitude of the marginalized. My own academic field, ethnic literary studies, has argued variously that we should study ethnic literature to be inclusive, or to understand cultural differences, or to improve students' empathy. These arguments would make much more sense if our students really knew how to read poems and novels effectively, or if they even cared to read literature at all, which they really don't. This tendency to substitute an ethical purpose for a disciplinary goal has been decried in a variety of conservative screeds over the past decade. While Fish is not of their camp, he agrees that they have a point. On the other hand, it seems to me that Fish has cast the game so narrowly that he imagines an academic world that has never really existed, and one we might not really care to work in if it did. To insist that there is no connection between right thinking and right living is not to strike an ancient academic chord, but a distinctly modern one. Fish is right to say that too many academics forget their calling and set themselves up as political or moral activists. But to separate the pursuit of right thinking from the pursuit of the good in general is not a division that the ancients would have recognized. Not Plato or Aristotle, not even the rhetoricians of whom Fish is our best contemporary exemplar, and certainly not John Milton, to whom Fish owes nearly all of his deepest intellectual convictions. The root meaning of the word discipline, as Fish would surely know, is the same as that of disciple, and there remains something in the academic calling that seeks for our students not only the highest ideals of what it means to be a thinker, but also the highest ideals of what it means to be a human being. It is one of the great tragedies of America, in its religion, its politics, its culture at large, that we came to believe that thinking was inconsequential, if not inimical, to doing. Whatever justice there is in Fish's diagnosis of academic culture, it's not clear that a prescription that widens the gap between thinking and doing is one that will really serve as a remedy. My name is Pete Powers, and you've been listening to The Reading Man. Podcasts from The Reading Man are archived at blogs.messiah.edu/listenup and at wordpress.thereadingman.com.